Need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves, but my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience, or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role-play for you, fantasize with you, no fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. And now, here she is, Dr. Susan Block.
Brothers and sisters, lovers and sinners, artists and exhibitionists, voyeurs and connoisseurs, swingers and play couples, orgiasts and échangistes, doggers and gangbangers and lesquins, libertins, all you children of sex, and we are all children of sex, you know. We may or may not be children of God, Jesus, or Allah, but we are all children of sex with a capital X. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Got to turn the mics up for that. Can I get an A women?
A women.
Yes, we are all children of sex with a capital X. And some of us are children of sex parties. And that is what we are talking about tonight here on the Dr. Susan Block Show, broadcasting live from Bonoboville at LAX with a capital X. We have produced a great many shows here in Bonoboville. Actually, in the old Bonobovilles that we have been in. We just moved into new Bonoboville here. But many of our shows have turned into orgies. But tonight, we're going to take a break from the action, and we're going to discuss the dynamics of group sex with the author of, well, the most comprehensive book on the subject, really, from ancient Rome to the AVNs. And she is joining us tonight on the phone. I don't know if she's here. Is she on the phone yet? But her name is Dr. Catherine Frank, and she is the author of Plays Well in Groups. And she's a scholar in residence at American University. And and we're happy to have her here. Hello, Dr. Kate. Are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. I really have enjoyed your excellent book, Plays Well in Groups. It's the best of its kind, which, of course, it's pretty much the only one of its kind in this genre.
Right.
There's really not too much that's been written about group sex. So why did you decide to tackle this subject?
You know, it was a practical and a theoretical interest, I think. You know, I had been researching monogamy for a while. I started out doing research on strip clubs, and then I moved into, after doing research on the sex industry and strip clubs, I moved into studying monogamy.
Now, first of all, can I just say that you researched strip clubs and you wrote a book called G-Strings and Sympathy?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And that was...
You went from that to monogamy. What was that?
It was based on the male customers of the clubs.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Their point of view.
Right.
Uh-huh. And so then you decided to go into the subject of monogamy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I started interviewing people who had monogamous marriages that considered monogamous, and then people who were secretly cheating, and then those with open relationships. And I interviewed lifestyle couples, polyamorous couples, couples in open relationships. And I also went to a lot of events during that time. And one of the things I started thinking about during that project, but then I really, you know, put together in this book, was how sometimes people were doing the same things in different spaces, but not necessarily identifying in the same way. And I think there's a lot of attention paid to how people identify. Are they gay or straight, or are they swingers or polyamorous or something else? And one of the things I found was that, you know, there were things happening in gay bathhouses, and there were things happening at lifestyle events, and then there were things that, you know, had been written about in terms of tribal religious rituals, and some of these things were very similar, and they were being done for similar reasons, regardless of how the people identified. Now, that's not to say that reasons were identical. I mean, there were also lots of differences, but I really wanted to try to look at practices across all these different times and places.
Yes, you did. You go throughout history and all around the world, actually, from prehistoric humans, bonobos, of course, Roman orgies, to sex in the Midwest among lifestylers, sex parties in Iran that are really quite revolutionary, the Liskins parties, all kinds, and of course Burning Man, Orgy Dome. So let's give a definition that encompasses all of this. How would we define group sex?
Well, defining anything, obviously, it becomes really slippery in academic writing. But in this case, I tried to define it in terms of group erotics so that I could sidestep the issue of what is sex, which is troubled researchers forever. So I really was looking at sexualized situations, anytime there were witnesses or people being witnessed in erotic situations. So there were undoubtedly times where I considered something group erotics that the people engaging it may not have. I mean, I considered fraternity hazing rituals where there was nudity and sexual contact, that sort of thing. I considered them part of a group erotics and talked about them in the bonding and socioeconomic exchange chapter. But, you know, they may not consider it that, but at any rate, you have to sort of define your territory somehow. And to me, what was most important wasn't whether or not there was insertion here or there, but really about whether or not people were being witnessed doing something that was transgressive and sexualized in other spheres.
So you could have a spanking orgy where there's no penetration.
Definitely, right.
Okay.
And I included BDSM parties and clubs, even though a lot of events, the more public events, are non-sexual in terms of penetrative vaginal sex or anal sex. But on the other hand, they were sexualized events or erotic events, and it involved those same types of witnessing, so I decided to include some of those discussions as well.
So you mentioned transgression, and of course we share a favorite erotic philosopher, Georges Bataille, who kind of said that you can't have eroticism without transgression, and certainly orgies are very transgressive. Why is that?
You know, that was one of my main interests has been in transgression, I think. So, and group sex, wherever it arises, is very emotionally and symbolically powerful for humans. So I was really interested in why that's the case. And so, you know, there's psychological implications of sex in general. And I think, you know, Bataille hits on this a lot. Freud as well, you know, but humans experience the social emotions like disgust, shame, and guilt, and how those are triggered and expressed vary across societies, but regardless, mm-hmm. if they're minimal levels of meaning, those are ways that we
identify the boundaries of our bodies, the boundaries of ourselves, and compare ourselves to others. So sex blatantly involves the boundaries of the body and the boundaries between itself and other. So it's intertwined with these social emotions from the very beginning of our lives. And, you know, you find across cultures and in religions and all kinds of belief systems that both sex and eating are surrounded by a lot of
taboos,
regulations, mm-hmm. rules, right? I mean, because those are places where the boundaries get fuzzy. We're putting things in and taking things out. And so when it comes to group sex, you know, it violates even more disgust rules and psychic boundaries and cultural norms than one-on-one sex. And so it also does that in front of witnesses, right? So
right.
has a lot of power there, a lot of potential power there.
Now, that witnessing and being witnessed, you know, it's funny because my husband and I, and we're a couple, I guess, but we go to orgies sometimes. We hold them, actually. And we call each other witness because, you know, we witness the meaningful events in each other's lives. And usually that is just one other person, you know, who you're married to. But in group sex, you've got all these different witnesses, people that, you know, that you're not committed to. And that, of course, is a great transgression. And another T, a great transcendence. It's like you go beyond the barriers that you usually put up with. So you, mm-hmm. you also talk about group sex as transcendence.
Right. And I think that was something that kept coming up. It was also something that is problematic, and so there's a lot to unpack there. Certainly, for some people, you know, having sex in a group or a group erotic experience like that, you know, if you are dealing with these, potentially, you know, overcoming disgust or shame or guilt about doing so, you're seeing other people doing the same things. There's ways that people feel affirmed in their own sexuality. A lot of people that I interviewed who had group sex experiences said they felt affirmed in their own sexuality and identity by watching other people or having other people watch them experience pleasure. You know, there were some mundane aspects to that, like learning new techniques, right? But then there were also some really more spiritual elements to it where they were feeling connected
to all these people, just like we usually feel when we have sex with one person. We feel connected, and sometimes our orgasms expand into connection with the universe. And in an orgy, well, there's all that much more opportunity for that feeling. And I guess that that feeling was really explored during the sexual revolution. It's been explored at many times, as your book reveals. But one sort of orgy master that you quote quite a bit in your book, Plays Well in Groups, is someone that my husband, Max, actually published, the great, late Marco Vasi.
Yes.
Wonderful writer. Really wonderful.
Yeah, I knew him very well, actually, from the days in New York with Annie Sprinkle and a lot of those radical sexualists of that time.
Yeah, now, though he gets pretty disillusioned in the end, so to speak, he's just the Pied Piper of orgies,
right,
really.
Right, right, yeah.
Right, and I wish I could have interviewed you for that, for those sections, and maybe for the follow-up segments, I can.
You should. You should come to Bonoboville.
Being the most prosecuted publisher in the United States, you might want to talk to me.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. We'll definitely set that up then. You know, since the book's been published, people have been writing me from around the world with new examples or additional data. And so I've been thinking of something for follow-up. I haven't quite decided how yet, but whether online or another book or something. But at any rate, yes, I found Marco Vasi's story to be very powerful, because he really did seem to believe at one time this was something that could liberate, you know, huge groups of people, right? I mean, it was a way to experience these other levels of ourselves and our lives. And the problem, I guess, when you have all the potential of an orgy and all the potential connection, there's also the potential for disconnection, right? And for it doesn't always happen, right? You don't always have these transcendent experiences. So
there's jealousy, there's discomfort, there's all kinds of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But there's just this wonderful example that you use in Plays Well in Groups of Marco Vasi kind of leading this encounter group, which I don't know if it was what it was supposed to be, but he was leading an encounter group, and he had this vision, and I don't know what he was on exactly, where he's an Aztec priest, and as an Aztec priest, he needs to have a virgin that he's going to sacrifice, and then he realizes it's kind of ridiculous to imagine a virgin there in Berkeley or wherever he is, in the sexual revolution, so he asks for a Virgo. And he gets this beautiful girl to strip naked, and she's a Virgo, and she lays there, and he just creates this whole illusion that he's this Aztec priest, and that he takes this obsidian knife, and he just plunges it into her heart, and she's sacrificed in front of this whole encounter group of acolytes, and they all believe him, and he's sort of tripping, so it seems like he believes it too, and the girl kind of acts sort of dead, and everybody freaks out, and he rolls her over, and she's alive, and he just, what does he say, like, the only thing I could do as an Aztec priest was to just, you know, fuck her crazily, something like that. And
right.
He does, and the orgy begins, and everyone is so relieved that she's not dead, or maybe some people think she is, that the orgy is just out there.
Yes, that was an incredible scene, and very well written, and pulls on so many of the things that I also wrote about in the book in terms of the historical layers of meaning that sort of enwrap our understandings of orgies, right? So between like the civilized and the primitive and, you know, the idea that once the orgy begins, all the other taboos will be broken, that if the taboo on group sex is, you know, lifted, then we're also going to move into suicide or murder or violence or all of these other things. So that scene really pulls on a lot of these layered meanings.
That's why, you know, some people love orgies and some people love to hate them and use them to symbolize like society just breaking down completely. For some people, it symbolizes, you know, this liberation. I like what you say towards the end of your book. You know, we should not put so many of our hopes in sex, but neither should we put so many of our fears. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's like that Hustler saying, relax, it's just sex. But it is so much, you know. I mean, we can't relax, you know. And if we do relax too much, it's no fun anymore. That's the transgression makes it fun, right?
Right. So. Right. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get away from the fact that it's going to be powerful and meaningful, you know. So it's hard to let go of all the shame or all of the disgust or all of the emotions that are sort of complicating things. I don't think you can really get rid of all that, or that you'd want to, as you just said, right? But at the same time, then, you know, adding to all of that, the idea that, well, now you have to have it, you know, to bring down capitalism or to accomplish whatever goal it is that this particular movement is going to try to link sex to, you know, a lot of times it's given more meaning than even sex can bear.
Mm. And orgies especially are given a lot of meaning. I mean, I give them meaning too. I'm guilty of that. You know, all the holidays I like to celebrate with orgies. And I think they originally were. I don't know. I mean, some of your sort of adventures into the history of group sex and orgies does reveal the background of many of our holidays involved some group sex.
Yeah, I mean, there's problems with getting some of that data. But I, you know, everything that I read for years, I mean, I spent a whole week in bed with this book, a 1,000-page book on the Marind of Papua New Guinea, a pre-colonial book on their culture and customs. And, I read it very widely, and I feel like people have done some of the same things throughout time, actually. You know, so I think that group sex has been experimented with, and certainly that power that we're talking about has gone through. There were rituals built around it. There were sometimes entire cosmologies for societies built around it. Unfortunately, the information that we have is usually filtered through the people who wrote about it, which were sometimes explorers or missionaries, with their own ends in mind, right? Their own purposes for collecting the data and writing about it as they did. And so sometimes those reports sound like something out of People magazine, more than they sound like an objective account of what was going on. So it's tough to... Some of the data was better than others, and some of it's difficult to confirm.
Well, you've done a very thorough job of research. It's very scholastic. But tell me, I mean, the subject of orgies, how has it been received in the halls of academia there at American University and elsewhere?
Well, you know, academia is a little slower to respond than the rest of the world, I guess. So I haven't had that much. I've only been out for 2 months, I guess, and I've started giving some talks on it, and I think the reviews that I've gotten so far in academia have been supportive. You know, it's a very, it's a topic that hasn't been written about in this way for decades, really. People have written about group sex among gay guys going to circuit parties in the context of HIV prevention, for example. There's been some stuff on lifestylers, mostly about how they negotiate encounters, but not really about as much about what they do sexually as what their relationships are like.
Well, you quote Terry Gould, who is a friend of ours, and of course we have a whole chapter in there on ethical hedonism and the bonobo way in his book, The Lifestyle, which is a great book and also has some excellent research, but it is pretty much just focused on the lifestylers. And of course our friend Dr. Bob McGinley, who kind of coined that term, play couples.
Right, and I think that book was probably the first on lifestyle couples that had been done in quite a few years, too. So it's like there was stuff done in the 1970s, and then there was this big lapse in time, and then he wrote The Lifestyle, you know, and that was very timely. I think it had been the first book in quite a while, taking it from more of a journalistic perspective.
Yeah, and he, of course, covers the bonobos in there, the bonobo way, and you talk a bit about the bonobos. How would you say group human sex compares with that of our kissing cousins, the bonobos?
Well, that's really more your area. But, you know, I think...
Well, they both give head.
I didn't do a lot on bonobos myself. I'm sorry, did you want to jump in?
No, I said they both give head.
Oh.
Well, they do a lot of things. Probably bonobos do more things, but bonobos have a lot more, you know, food with sex.
Right.
The lifestyles tend to separate the food from the sex.
Right. They don't need a theme. The bonobos don't need a theme. They don't need transitions like that, I don't think.
Who knows? Maybe they have themes, though.
Or maybe they do.
We're not that aware of. They certainly use sex for different purposes, so the group sex could, you know, the theme could be good relations between tribes. Or
they don't have clubs, do they? Like Plato's and...
The bonobos?
Yeah, or Hellfire Club? They don't have that, right?
Not as messy as the Hellfire Club.
Although it would be interesting to know if they use certain spaces more than others.
Yeah, that's...
For the reasons of sex, I mean... I don't really know anyone who studies them directly, so I was using secondary research on that. Do you know if they have any?
If they have spaces that they use over and over again?
Right.
Oh, sure. Usually it's places where they find food because they love to combine food and sex, and we're kind of in touch with all kinds of people in all different bonobovilles, including Sally Cox, who runs the Bonobo Conservation Initiative,
and we just met.
And we just met Claudine Andre, who has the Lolia Bonobo Sanctuary, where they take in bonobo orphans, because, of course, they're highly endangered. So anybody out there who identifies with group sex, you should adopt the bonobos as your mascot and adopt a bonobo from either Claudine Andre or Sally Cox's Bonobo Conservation Initiative. And of course, Vanessa Woods, Bonobo Handshake, she observed a lot of group sex among the bonobos. They don't, you know, one thing is they don't leave anybody out. Like, they're not as exclusive.
It's funny that the primatologists haven't observed as much human sex.
As us. No, we're kind of, I mean, we've observed a lot of human sex here, a lot of group sex. And by the way, the whole idea of chaos erupting is kind of the opposite, because when you have group sex, you've got to have more rules than when you just have couple sex.
Right, exactly. And that's where, you know, trying to look at some of those rules. And one of the fascinating things that I have noticed when I've gone to clubs and parties, and you could walk into a club almost anywhere in the world, and some of those rules are going to be different. But for the most part, you know, if you've been before, if you're experienced enough, you know that there are going to be rules. You're looking for how things are going to unfold, how it's acceptable to begin an encounter or end an encounter or transition to the next space. So I think that there's definitely a structure, and sometimes that structure, especially in terms of the way people make their activity visible or not, it's very widespread.
Yes. And
certainly researchers haven't been able to observe human sex. You can't have people copulate in a lab, you know. Human subjects is really tough on that sort of thing.
Well, Masters and Johnson did it.
Yeah, they had a little bit of that.
But, you know, it is kind of tough to have that natural feeling in a lab. But in a way, here in our Bonoboville, it is kind of a lab. You know, we have cameras on all the time. We have a lot of porn stars, or, you know, people that are in the outskirts of the porn industry, so they don't mind cameras. In fact, they like them. The camera is like other people, in a way. It's like more witnesses. Yay! You know? And what do you think of the porn type of group sex? I mean, you cover Annabelle Chong and her gangbang, which was pretty historic, and since then there's been a lot of gangbangs, and then there's that amazing 500-person orgy from Japan, where they're all, talk about rules, they're all doing the same thing. It's amazing!
Right. I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I think is, so we talked about how transgressive it is, you know, to actually be there, but I think there's something transgressive about watching it as well, in terms of simply that many bodies. I mean, porn has experimented with group scenes for a very long time, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it's one of the staples, I think. It might be fair to say, not necessarily a gangbang the way Chong did it, and it's common now, and then you get all kinds of niche ideas and porn. So, like, I've looked at now the bukkake or gokon, where they're actually ingesting semen, sometimes from fans, so there's even more ways of witnessing and participating from afar in those scenes.
Well, porn kind of expands the orgy. Just watching porn simulates group sex if you're watching more than, you know, one person. If you're watching a couple of people or three people, it's like they're right there. And, you know, you don't have to go anywhere. You got a group sex orgy going on right in your, you know, on your computer.
Right. And, you know, I actually didn't go that far to look at porn viewing as part of it, though it's certainly completely would fit in with the definition. I kind of limited that definition, and I said, I'm going to have to stop where you can actually stop the action and call for a head count.
Yeah, you've got to have some boundaries when you're doing research.
But it makes sense, right? I mean, since the book's been published, I've been working on some chapters on porn and starting to go more in that direction. And certainly through psychoanalysis, you could also talk about how many people are in the bed, right? You've got your Oedipal ideals and all these other characters, fantasies.
So,
but I couldn't get into that either.
Speaking of group sex, I want to just take a little detour to talk about a friend of ours who just passed away. I don't know if you know him. His name is Frank Moore, and he was an incredible kind of orgy master himself. I have a little sort of button of his with his face on it here that I'm showing to the camera. And Frank just passed away. He was really an amazing orgy master, and a lot more than that. He was a great artist. He was one of the NEA four that was criticized by Jesse Helms, and he was
along with Annie.
Along with Annie Sprinkle. Mm-hmm. And he was. I'm getting all choked up. He was a great poet, a great artist, a great shaman, and a wounded healer. And that would be the thing that most people would notice about him when they would first see him, was that this was a quadriplegic individual who had no control over his arms or legs.
Or his voice.
Or his voice. Right. Could not speak, could not, that is, couldn't talk.
Although he sang and he went.
And sang, yes, yes, yes. And he... Yeah. And he couldn't walk,
but he
could dance.
Yes.
And he danced.
And he had lots of women.
Could have lots of sex, and he had lots of women. He had a wife.
Right.
Who was totally devoted to him, Linda. We love you, Linda. And a bunch of people that surrounded him. It was like a erotic family. And more people that would come to the performances that were sort of these
having sex
5-hour things sometimes, or whole days of music and kind of rubbing. And yeah, they didn't do hardly any penetration, or maybe none. They did something called aeroplay,
right,
which was mostly what we call outer course,
know,
kind of rubbing and nuzzling and that kind of thing, and a lot of nudity. Certainly if you looked at it, it would look like an orgy, but very slow-moving one that very kind of dreamy and trance-like, definitely one of those, you know, transcendent kind of things, or an attempt to be transcendent. And maybe it was partly because of his paraplegic or quadriplegic state.
Well, this is when he was born, the doctors really gave him very short time to live.
Short time to live, yes. And also had no idea what a genius he was, of course. They thought he was, I don't know if they thought he was retarded or just certainly not capable of much. And he disproved them totally became just a great American revolutionary and a great teacher and great orgy master, Frank Moore. We miss you. Yeah. Had you ever heard of him, Dr. Kate?
No, and I'm interested. Did he set up the aeroplay session specifically for the group, for group healing, or for?
Yeah, I mean he called. He was a writer. He wrote about what aeroplay was, or what it is, as a form of touch. And this was in the days before people were even using the expression outer course.
Right.
And that it was a form of touch that, transmits erotic energy without being body fluid exchanging sex. And he would speak mostly through his wife, using a pointer on his head, pointing to a lexigram, as well as making tongue movements so that she would translate. And he would talk to people about... opening up, liberating themselves, kind of a little bit Marco Vasi-like.
And he was also, he railed against society that tried to make everybody normal.
Definitely. Yeah, yes.
He was like, you've got to push. We need all the weirdos. We need the defective ones. We need all of us.
All of us.
And I can understand from his point of
view.
The mutation.
Right. He wrote a wonderful poem that we just posted on the blog about being a mutant and how that's important to evolution, and that we shouldn't discard our mutants. And of course, he was almost discarded. And he became such a leader in art and expression and spirituality and sex. And
we
orgies.
Love you, Frank.
We love him.
Aww. We'll be there. I'll be there shortly.
Me too.
Well, that's wonderful. That's someone I would love to include him with, when I do the next.
You definitely should.
But, that's a wonderful story. I mean, amazing.
Well, there's so much. He would always have so much, that would go into the orgy. It's not just about sex. It's about music. It's about atmosphere.
Right, right.
It's about art. It's about meaning for a lot of people. It's like
and breaking through to the other side, as you know. You know?
Yeah. And it doesn't always work, you know. No. It doesn't work for some people. You get a stomach ache, or you know, you get jealous of your mate, or you know, somebody calls you on your cell that your kid just got, you know, 103 fever.
You get afraid of the people that pay you at the bank.
But I think that, you know, what you just said is reminds me of a lot of the groups, whatever group it was, the different enclaves I was studying. You know, I think it's more successful when it's not just about the sex. And the people who really enjoy group sex and who, for whom this becomes part of their life, whether their lifestyle or, you know, they like sex clubs or they go to the, you know, buff parties in New York or London or something, it's not just the sex that keeps them going. It's not just the sex that keeps them, that makes them satisfied with the enclave that they've chosen, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, you just said it's about the music and the different types of touch and the group and the atmosphere, and all of those things come into play.
And the politics
between what kind of sex party they go to, they're not just going randomly. They're not all the same, right?
Politics is also an element. I mean, when you describe those sex parties in Iran, in Tehran, Iran, it's like these are people that are risking getting whipped by the morality police. And possibly if they do the right-wrong combination, like have sex with somebody who's married or something like that while they're drinking and dancing at the same time, they could get, you know, executed.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I'm always surprised when I look at our statistical base and to see what people are watching. And whether it's in Iran or Iraq or Israel or Pakistan, we're all very much the same. We're all looking at the squirt salon videos. You know, we're all...
Well, people are people.
Yeah, people are people. So, and look what's happening in Pakistan with the ambassador.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't know what's real with that.
But interesting stuff.
Interesting stuff. It is, I guess, more interesting the more transgression is involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and there's not very much information on that.
No, so we're a little hesitant to get into that, Max. Since friends of ours might be involved.
One thing that I also noticed was that throughout history, you know, a lot of leaders, scientists, a lot of public figures have been accused of having orgies, right? And
it's an accusation.
What's that?
It is an accusation that carries some political, you know, kind of demerits.
Definitely, right? And so some of them probably have them, some of them didn't, some probably have them who are never accused of it, right? But the reason someone gets accused of having hosted orgies or been to orgies, you know, that usually has a political bent to it as well. So I'm always looking for that when I hear another accusation or another story about it.
Yeah.
Who's telling that story and why? Why is it being told now, and why is it being told in the way that it is? You know?
Mm-hmm. So, yes, orgies are often thrown as some sort of symbol of decay or demoralization.
Shaming.
It's a shaming. Last week we did a show on slut shaming, which, of course, goes on a lot about individuals, but it can also go on about a whole group.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But, and as you say, shame is an aphrodisiac.
You know, express fears against groups, you know, sometimes within a society or even, you know, an outside, seen as an outside threat that maybe not a lot is known about or maybe, you know, that are very misunderstood. So you often see, you know, accusations of, you know, having orgies when it's, you know, a minority group or a group that's not very well understood. There's not a lot of information about, or it's almost like, I wouldn't say it's a conscious cover-up, but it's more of a deflection of the fears into this transgressive sexuality, right?
I've kind of become a big fan of, what's his name, Wiener?
Oh, Anthony.
Anthony.
Next thing you know, we're going to find out he's having group sex.
Right, but... I just saw him. He defends his position so beautifully, you know.
He's a good talker.
He's
from
a
New
good
York.
Talker from New York.
Yeah. And he's got a lot to defend with that wiener out
just
there
everywhere.
Just
because I'm showing my stuff doesn't
he
mean I can't
He certainly needs
be a
witnesses
good.
To his sex to feel good. A lot of people need witnesses. What can I say? You know, I want to name drop a couple of authors. One is Dr. David Lay, who's a friend of yours, and we had him on the show last year, I guess, when his book came out, The Myth of Sex Addiction. You know, mm-hmm. And of course, that's another kind of label that a lot of people are called, especially people who participate in group sex, as sex addicts. What do you think of the sex addiction label?
Right. You know, I think it's complicated, and I did take that up in the book. I mean, it's impossible not to address it if you're writing about group sex, you know? And I guess that, you know, there are people who push boundaries of sexuality. We'll just talk about sexuality now and about the other addictions as well. There are people who push the boundaries, and then there are people who push the boundaries even more such that it becomes debilitating for them, right? The way I ended up tackling it in the book was that, you know, I interviewed one guy who'd had a lot of group sex for whom it had never caused any problems, and another guy who'd had a lot of it, but it was tied up with a coke addiction and an addiction to simply finding the next partner and the next partner and the next partner, and it was extremely disruptive to his life, you know. And I think we can find, you know, we can always find stories to prove any point that we want to, and I think what it comes down to with sex addiction is that, unfortunately, that label, it's pretty easy to get labeled a sex addict, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can take a test online and be like,
well,
you know, all my friends scored pretty high at one point. So,
it's also a badge of honor for many people.
I think at this point it's like slut,
it's like,
right?
Yeah, hey,
in fact,
I'm a sex
call in
addict,
some of the sex know. Addicts. We should have, our sex addict number one, our birthday girl should come in soon. Yeah. See, I think we're taking this term and making it ours. We have a birthday girl here, and she's getting ready for her spanking orgy. So, welcome, Trixie.
They were doing that outside last night.
Yeah. Oh, they were doing a spanking orgy right in the parking lot, weren't they?
No, right on the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk.
Okay.
They were walking by.
Talk in the microphone.
They were walking by. Oh, wait.
We have group sex going on our sidewalk because we're near a bar that when it closes, the people come out and they overflow doesn't know what to do with themselves. They're not ready to go home, so they have sex on the street. I guess if you watch it, it's called dogging. Right?
Well, no, I think it's entertaining, not dogging.
Well, what is dogging exactly?
I mean, I guess that's something, I'm not hip to all the popular terminology.
Well, Dr. Kate can enlighten us. Give a definition of dogging.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a solid definition that people use everywhere, but, you know, the term as, you know, on apps and the way people talk about it online and in interviews was it's a more of a way to meet people. I mean, it's not lifestyle where you're going to necessarily go meet a couple and go out to dinner first, but it's more like using public spaces, almost like gay guys historically used cruising spaces.
I know what cruising is.
Meet people and have more public sexuality, but not necessarily as, and they'll exchange phone numbers, or I think there's apps you can use for the best spots and
Grindr?
I thought it was where a couple might be having sex, like in a parking lot or something, or on the sidewalk, and a bunch of people kind of find out about it and text each other or tweet each other, and then they all come and watch.
Well,
or maybe join in.
More organized than that, or there can be spaces as well, you know, known dogging sites, that sort of thing.
And who's that athlete that was outed as a dogger? I don't know.
I wrote about Stan Collymore.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Well, he got totally into it.
Who made some really great statements afterwards about, you know, the hypocrisy of, in that case, that brings back the sex addiction question because, you know, he was called a sex addict and doggers were called shameful sex addicts. And, you know, one of his points was that, you know, why don't we treat cheaters with the same sort of hysteria and disgust that we treat doggers? You know, he made a lot of really powerful statements about
how he was treated after that experience. And, you know, certainly that caused havoc in his marriage. And so there is a sense where I don't want to belittle the fact that sometimes people do feel they have an addiction and they feel drawn to activities that aren't good for them. At the same time, if those activities were more acceptable or you could talk about them or you had a community that could support you, would those activities be as bad for them, right? There's so many layers to those questions.
Right, right. Well, we have a community that supports our sex addicts. Like, in fact, Trixie's our manager. So, Trixie, do you have any group sex questions or comments about the subject?
I love group sex, quite frankly.
Why do you like it so much?
Because it's so fun and so freeing. There's so many different people, and it's just so sensual, and it's just like a giant energy bubble.
It's arousing. I think that's a big thing, is like if you get tired of having sex with the same person, which a lot of people do, group sex is a novelty.
It is. You know, it's not something that you do every day, but, you know, every so often there's like, hey, I can jump into a party and let's party. You know, everybody's touching everybody. It's like a free love experience. That's great. Mm-hmm.
And what about women? I mean, you know, we're supposed to be the fairer sex and everything and the less sexual sex and all that stuff. Are we really? I mean,
sexual.
Like when you have a group sex experience, I guess that kind of gets turned on its head a lot.
Well, I mean, in my case, all my group sex incidences were all giant pussy piles, if you will.
That's true.
You mean all women?
Yes, all women.
All women. And, you know, girls love their accessories. So.
Although you've had your woman pussy piles here in Bonoboville, well, our old place, where there's man stuff going on as well outside of you and men watching and men sort of, you know, sneaking
it's
a little spank in there
everybody
or something.
In Bonoboville, it's like a giant flow, and it's so freeing and inviting. It's like, because sometimes, you know, you'll go to a swingers club. I've been to many swingers clubs and, like, not sex clubs, but, like, BDSM clubs, you know, those little fetish clubs. And it's very, it's inviting, but then, you know, it's still kind of like, I don't know if I want to sit here, but I'm going to, because I want to have a good time. You know?
Well, you found your group. You mean you found your group with Bonoboville?
Yes,
you
definitely did.
You found your group,
I'm
sister.
I'm definitely
Trixie.
A Bonobo. It's definitely a lot more freeing, you know? And I do feel more comfortable here than I did at any of the swingers club. Not to mention, I did have lots of fun, and I did see some. Very
nothing against
things.
Swinger clubs. We,
no,
you
love
know,
them.
They're
it's great.
Great.
I've
great.
Seen
but they're a little bit like one
sessions.
Note, maybe, just all about swinging. That's what they're about.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of swinging, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
You know?
And we have a little bit of Selena. Welcome,
hello.
Selena.
Hello.
You are here for Trixie's birthday.
Yes, I am. My loved, my beloved.
Uh-huh. And what do you think about group sex?
Well, I never really had too much experience in group sex until I joined the Bonoboville family.
Oh, we've corrupted you.
No, actually, I've always been extremely curious about it. And being around you guys has just totally allowed me to, you know, tap into that super raw sense of sexuality that I have, that animalistic almost sense.
You sure do.
Sexuality that I have. And I'm so grateful that I've found this wonderful outlet with you guys. Like, I'm a completely different Selena White after meeting Dr. Susie.
I didn't realize
that's a testimony if I ever heard one.
I thought she was a confirmed slut. I had no idea that I brought her
out. Oh, yes. I'm always confirmed as a slut.
Yeah.
But yes.
But we have to get you situated
here.
You're
on camera, darling.
Oh, we want to get you on camera. So.
Oh, okay.
Adjusting. Oh, okay. But yes, you know, it's a lot of people. You know, it's Bonoboville's great.
Yeah.
But I totally agree. A lot more people need to explore the sexuality. That's the thing, you know. It's such that hush hush subject. But
yeah, it is kind of like taboo in a lot of ways, but...
Well, have you told other people about your group sex experiences in Bonoboville?
I have. Recently, I've just become so open and so assertive with my sexuality.
Really? Have you told your mom and dad?
Well, I don't know my mother. I don't have a relationship with my mother, but my father and me are extremely close, and I ruined his one very special thing in life, which was pornography. He said, "Thank you, daughter. You ruined the one thing I had left in life."
Because you've done some porn.
Yeah, so he won't, he won't watch pornography or anything.
Afraid that he might catch you.
That he might just catch a glimpse of his daughter's big ass on camera.
You do have a delicious ass, though.
Sorry, Dad. I'm so sorry. But he's actually very proud of me and very supportive of what I do and gives me a lot of love and support, so it's a good thing.
That's very good. I mean, a lot of people don't get support from their families for their group sex experiences, I would imagine.
My dad's only like 15 years older than me.
Very quiet. I mean, it's like a double thing going on. Here you are. You don't? That's right.
No, you're not. It's one of those things. It's your private life, and what you do in your private life is your business. It shouldn't really. I mean, more people should be accepting of it and more explorative in their private life. It'd make them happier people.
I like that word, explorative. Here's the thing I want to put forth to Dr. Kate. I mean, group sex is all about exposing yourself and witnessing and being witnessed and letting other people see. But because of its reputation, you have to be extra secretive about it.
That's right.
Maybe even more than you are about having an affair.
No, yeah, right.
And really, it's
I think what Trixie, right?
Yes.
Was just saying, I think there is something to that, though, because, people who are enjoying group sex and enjoying the witnessing part, it's not just anyone that they want to witness. I mean, occasionally, that's the erotic intention or interest, but I didn't find that to be the case, across the board. A lot of people were saying they wanted friendly witnesses. They wanted to make extra careful that there was no one who was going to be offended or hostile to it or just even not turned on or interested in it. So it's not like a type of exhibitionism, a clinical exhibitionism where you're exposing to anyone, just anyone out there, right?
Well, that's like doing webcam for everyone. It's when you don't care.
You're wanting to show it to people who want to be there. So it's a selective audience, and I do think, there can be a privacy element to it. I think people ask, anytime I give a talk on lifestyle or something, people would say, well, what do they tell their kids? And I would say back, what do you tell your kids?
Right? Why are you telling your kids about your sex life? You're a terrible parent. What's going on with you? Practice safe sex should be the only sex talk that you should have.
Well,
generally, if they don't necessarily want to know that much, don't ask much, and you're not going to be talking about positions or things like that. So are the other people, if you're polyamorous, most people are part of your life, your relationships.
True.
Are you polyamorous?
Yes, I am polyamorous.
You're talking to the microphone.
Yes, I'm polyamorous.
And what does that mean to you? You have a husband and a girlfriend and a what?
I would have a husband, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, several boyfriends, several girlfriends. I mean, as far as my love can be spread, if it's somebody, an individual that fills a certain need that I have, then definitely I'm going to let them serve the need. So, yeah. I can love more than one person, definitely. So.
Well, it's like in that Christopher Ryan and Casilda Jethas wrote a book called Sex at Dawn, of course, which you quote quite a bit in your book, Plays Well in Groups. And one thing they say is a lot of people question, how can polyamorous people love more than one person? And they say, well, just like a mother can love more than one child.
Well, each person serves a different need. Mm-hmm.
They all have different personalities.
Yeah, everybody has a separate...
I like how you use that word, serve.
Yeah, I mean, they say... I mean, I'm a very dominant female.
Yeah, that's why you use it. Yeah.
Actually, being in Bonoboville, I've been exploring my sub side lately, which is great.
It's good to have different sides. Yeah.
But I'm actually...
Mix it up.
Yeah, I'm actually a dom, but I consider myself kind of a switch. So that, that being said, every person that I love them differently and they love me differently and they give me a different, a different type of love. So
it all, la différence.
It all serves a different purpose. Mm.
So what do you think about Sex at Dawn's thesis that back in the day, we really were kind of bonobo-like, we humans, Dr. Kate?
You know, in some ways, like I say in the book, I leave that to really the evolutionary psychologist to sort of duke it out over. I mean, I guess it's not that I don't care what we were like back in the day, but I don't know that we need to have that as a justification to underlie the fact that, you know, there's a way that we are now, and that is often non-monogamous, you know? So I buy their argument that, you know, we weren't necessarily monogamous, or we didn't necessarily evolve to be specifically monogamous pairs, because what I see in my work, you know, 16 years of studying sexuality, is not a lot of monogamy. I mean,
ever.
I'm not saying there's not a lot of monogamy out there, but what I have studied for all of this time is people who are not monogamous, you know, and there are plenty of them to keep me very busy.
Yeah, there is.
And you keep finding more and more, right? Yeah. You just discovered Bonoboville.
Is not, you know, what exists is a wide variety
and of Frank Moore,
sexual
right.
behavior. And a lot of it, you know, that I've explored is non-monogamous. So, yeah, whether or not we're more like bonobos or chimps or something else is not really something I think there are people who are better qualified. Probably even, you know, you will probably be much better qualified to respond to that.
There will be a book coming out on this subject. Stay tuned for The Bonobo Way. So so in the meantime, I got to bring up something. I mean, you have taken a certain approach in your research, which I wholeheartedly approve of. And, I mean, not that you need my approval, but I guess you need the approval of, you know, your academic masters. And you've obviously got it. And you don't just read about this stuff. You don't just watch this stuff. You have participated in both your first book, G-Strings and Sympathy, as a stripper, and in Plays Well in Groups isn't that a good name?
Yeah.
Plays Well in Groups, also a good name. I should get the subtitle here. It's A Journey Through the World of Group Sex.
Yeah.
And she takes this journey mostly through books and mostly through various research, but she also takes it through her own life.
Right.
Well, and I should say there's a difference between the two books and how I used my experience as a method. And so in the first book, it was very traditional anthropology where I, you know, working as a stripper was part of my research methodology. I was, you know, interested in the male customers. I was interested in the interactions. And actually working as a dancer was part of, you know, doing as the natives do, right?
Right.
So that was a specific part of the method. This book, The Plays Well in Groups, you know, I really didn't ever set out to write a book on group sex. And so I never went to any events or parties as part of the research specifically for that book. In fact, that was more of, you know, how my life was evolving through my study of monogamy and non-monogamy. And when I got the idea for the book, I realized that my experiences had given me sort of a wealth of data to draw and questions to ask about group sex in other settings. But it wasn't the same. It wasn't part of a research strategy, if that makes sense.
Well, maybe it wasn't, but it certainly helps because otherwise people would think, oh, you're just like looking at us orgias under a microscope. And
I feel like that makes it an even better reason to do research on it.
Well, yeah.
You know, because you have experience and you know the lay of the land, if you will. And it's nice to actually have a scientific point of view, if you will.
Yeah. She has a scientific point of view and, you know, kind of buttresses it, so to speak, with her personal experience.
Good word.
Well, I think one of the reasons I was able to do so much in this book was because I did know enough that I didn't have to go in and ask questions like, are you ever jealous of your partner? Or, you know, how do you decide if you're going to have sex with someone? Or, you know, those were kind of questions that I had already
answered for myself, right? That I knew there were rules and things like that, and I didn't have to. I could start looking at things in a more expansive framework, I think, rather than try to figure out the details of each space.
You saw jealousy in action, like husbands persuading their wives to come to a swing party, and then the wife finally does, and then she finds herself in the middle of a gangbang, and the husband says, "How could you?"
And then all his insecurities and issues come to the surface.
Something that's there. I've experienced it. You know, everyone I've talked to has experienced it at some point, and it's a fascinating topic, certainly. But I could go different places with my analysis, I think, because.
So did it ruin it for you? Did writing about it ruin group sex for you?
You know, I actually think that part of the reason I wrote about it was that it was, I wouldn't say it's my primary erotic focus. So I tend to be a nerd in all environments, sort of analyzing things. So,
I like that.
She is. Nerd.
She's hot.
Yeah, she's a hot nerd. Right.
You know, whatever you study a lot, you know, it's going to take on a different, you know, color than for other people.
Now, speaking of studies, you know, you didn't participate in all types of group sex, and you examine in your book both the good and the bad of group sex, and that I found very unusual, because, like, for instance, Terry Gould's book, The Lifestyle, is only about, you know, lifestylers, play couples, and swinging that's consensual, but you examine consensual, probably more, but you also examine non-consensual group sex and how that occurs in all different societies through history and around the world. And can you talk a little bit about the similarities in non-consensual and consensual group sex and, of course, the differences?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think one of the reasons that, you know, one of the things that can tend to happen is, you know, as we've been talking about, group sex can be linked up to all these different political movements and ideas, and that can sometimes be a romanticization of, you know, that if we all have orgies, you know, that somehow we'll become a kinder, more cooperative, or more peaceful type of human. And that could be true for some groups. On the other hand, it's not necessarily the case, right? There's violent group sex. And the reasons that group sex is so effective as violence, it's extremely effective. It's been used in warfare across history. It's used in
gang rapes.
You know, gang rape. It's used in intense initiation rituals at times. You know, it's used to punish or shame individuals as well, you know, not necessarily organized, but just sort of police hierarchies and enforce rules. And so, I mean, it's very effective because, I was talking about the shame, guilt, disgust, all of these really basic emotions, these comparisons to others, you know, that it becomes a way of marking and excluding people. And it's very effective for the same reasons as, you know, for some of the same reasons, I should say, as, you know, people can have an experience of identifying with a group during a transgender experience. So, you know, there's some similar psychological dynamics going on there. I'm not saying those two things are the same at all, but what I'm talking about is the impact of having people see you having sex or being raped, right? That there's an impact there. And I thought it was important not to just focus on the positive or the consensual or the pleasurable, because as you can see sort of further on in the book, these things also sometimes cross over, right? So there can be experiences that are not wholly pleasurable for everyone in the group and not wholly coercive for everyone in the group either. So there's this whole range.
Yeah, well, of course, we know, you know, when there's a gang rape, it's obviously not consensual for the person being raped. And we know that when it's a lifestyles convention, everybody's consensual. Then there's sort of these in-between things like frat house parties and things like that where maybe somebody's drunk and they're so drunk they don't know what they're doing. I mean, there is crossover that, you know, you got to be very, very
there's
sensitive to.
Area.
You know, there is. And that's why
like
here...
me who like gay group. No, I'm just playing.
Well, yeah, you are just playing. But yet, you like to pretend or something.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's what it is.
In a violent act, you know, there are some perpetrators who are being maybe feeling coerced or feel afraid or, you know, are afraid of retaliation if they don't participate.
Group pressure, you know.
What's going on there with how those bonds are being created and maintained through violent acts they all engage in. So,
well, the group can be for good or for bad. You know, groups are not all wonderful. You know, sometimes the group is hell-bent on hurting, and then, you know, they pressure other people. Anyway, it's great to see the different types of group sex, both the positive and the negative and the kind of gray areas, and be able to know how to kind of run your own if you're going to have an orgy. You know, I mean, that's one thing is to watch out for the telltale signs of badness and try to keep it good.
There's always red flags.
Right.
And then there's also the fact that sometimes sex can bring out the best in us, but sometimes it can bring out the worst in us, right? And sometimes you can also reinterpret your experiences later on. And I think one thing we don't get to sexual experiences is the complexity they deserve. People want their experiences to be all good or all bad. So then you get experiences where maybe someone has tried going to a sex club and they hated it. And then, you know, they say, you know, sex clubs are horrible, good sex is horrible, the lifestyle is horrible, whatever it is, are made, you know, or someone reinterprets their experience later on and says, you know, I really shouldn't have been doing that, or I was doing that because I'd had an experience when I was younger. Right. We want to make these neat explanations for everything. We want to tie up all the loose ends. And I just think that sometimes that's not necessary or even possible to do. And so we should allow for experiences that are sometimes ambiguous, right?
Well, sex is ambiguous anyway, and group sex just multiplies it.
Yeah.
Multiplies all that ambiguity.
Definitely. Definitely.
Right. So I think we're getting ready for a spanking orgy here.
I'm ready. I've been holding the power of this birthday spanking in this right palm all day long.
Oh, wow. Well, I have these hands, these Miley Cyrus hands. She kind of created
with the cute nails. Look at, and they almost match my nails,
you know,
Susie.
But
Dr. Susie,
they
look.
Do. You could use one, but don't spank too hard with them.
Because I don't want the nails to fall.
Right.
They're knee press-ons.
Right. Didn't Miley Cyrus create kind of an orgy-like experience with those bears? And that's why people were... loved it and hated it, right?
I mean, I don't know about Miley.
She was whacking them.
I don't know about Miley Cyrus, but I know that Selena and Trixie, we have a lot of fun spanking.
You
so.
Do.
We have quite a lot of fun with our spanking parties, so.
Yeah. Well, people love spanking orgies, I think partly because it is a form of aeroplay or outer course that doesn't involve any kind
actual
of...
actual penetration.
Penetration, exactly.
Right. Have you ever been to a spanking orgy, Dr. Kate?
I have not, no.
Well, I mean, it's like a BDSM
definitely
orgy,
BDSM.
Except it's definitely BDSM, but it kind of focuses on the spanking.
On that particular, right.
Yeah.
On that.
Well, I went to lots of BDSM clubs and events, but not one specifically on spanking, so.
It's a lot of fun. You should try it.
Now, have you ever celebrated a birthday with spankings?
No.
Oh, no.
Every birthday requires spankings in
requires
in Bonoboville.
Yes, absolutely. So we're about to get into that, I guess, right?
I'm
well, you're the birthday
I'm over here
girl.
Spanking myself. Like, I'm so excited.
We're getting into the last 20 minutes of the show.
I'm so excited.
Well, I give birthday spankings. I love birthday spankings.
Okay, can I be the first to give her birthday spankings?
You've already got your implement here.
I've already got my tool. I'm ready to go.
Well, I want to ask our guest, would you like to stay online for the birthday spanking, or should we say goodbye?
Yeah,
I should probably say bye. It's really late.
Okay. Well, we're gonna think of you as we have a spanking orgy.
This is
orgy.
A special dedication to you.
Yes, we're gonna dedicate it to you. We have your picture right here. We have. Lovely picture of Dr. Kate.
Spank
right
party
here.
Just for Dr.
Kate. And everybody
Dr. Kate is beautiful. That's Dr. Kate?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's the first time I've seen her picture. She's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, she's great. Wow.
Dr. Kate, you have got it going on.
Yeah. And soon, hopefully, she'll come visit us when we're a little
organized
here. We're a little disorganized right now.
A little more set up, yes.
Yeah.
We would love to have her.
And have fun. Legendary things about your parties.
So, traditional Bonoboville
parties. Only the good stuff is true.
And some of the bad stuff.
Oh, yeah. When I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
I'm even better.
That's Mae West. And she probably had group sex, I would think.
Mae West was beautiful.
Anyway,
all the groups.
Everybody who is listening or watching, go to Amazon, hopefully through the blog where, you know, we make 2 cents on it, and get Plays Well in Groups. It's, you know, a
Catherine
classic.
Frank.
Yeah, a journey through the world of group sex. If you have any interest in group sex, the history, or how to have a good group sex party and avoid a lot of the pitfalls.
I love party tips.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of indirect. It's very academic, but it's very entertaining. Full of lots of humor and great examples, and indirectly you get a lot of tips on how to avoid, you know, scenes of gang rape and have just a nice
That's important. Everybody
orgy.
Needs a nice little guy.
Right, 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 right. You got to, you know what
so
to
do.
So
everybody's on the same page.
So,
well, thank you
so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Yes, you guys have fun. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye, Dr.
Bye.
Catherine
Bye-bye.
Frank.
Bye.
All right. So,
I've
you
got my
are
implement.
The birthday girl.
I am the birthday girl. I
and we have an implement. And
There's a horn.
I believe
there's
a cake. And
it's a kazoo.
Happy birthday to my lovely Trixie. I love you, baby.
There she goes. And this is Scarlett with the cake. And
this is Scarlett Raven XX at Twitter. Scarlett Raven XX.
Really?
That's New Year's Eve. Shut up. There you go. Write Trixie's name in the sparkler.
I've never had happy birthday kazooed to me. Yay!
Yay!
Happy birthday,
Yay!
Trixie Plenty.
Blow,
Trixie baby, blow.
Plenty. Yeah. Hey, wait, hold on. Lick that. Stick your tongue
Lick
out.
That.
Stick your tongue out.
Those
Lick
of you who are listening. You want to see what she's
Ooh,
licking?
Hold on, hold on. Hold that, girls. Hold that.
I think I got all on my face.
Mm. Hold on. Open your mouth.
Oh, yeah. Baby. Lick that cream,
Lick
baby.
Lick that cream.
Lick that cream.
Oh, don't bite
Eat
it.
That
you got to stroke
berry.
It. You got to stroke it. You can't bite it.
All the more spankings for Trixie. For
biting.
Biting.
Yeah.
Aw.
I
beautiful.
That much cream on that face.
You're full of cream right now. You're such a creamy girl.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
take a picture
girl.
Of... So you, did you see the... Look, we even had it written for you.
I know, right? Happy birthday, Trixie.
Aww. Okay, so I don't know if we should eat on the radio.
No.
Let's
because
spank first.
We'll have, you know, gummy voices. So we need to do...
Creamy.
The spanking, on the other hand,
we'll have whipped cream
can do that. So
whipped cream voices.
All right. So now I don't need to know how old you are.
A lady never tells.
Right. I wouldn't want you to ask me. So we'll just have to give you 100 spanks. No.
That's okay with me, Dr. Susie.
So I know exactly how many spanks to
Okay,
get.
You got to go onto a microphone. You got to use a mic.
Oh.
Mike, if you're going to talk.
I know how old she is, so I know exactly how many spanks Trixie gets.
Does she get to request that you take your shirt off for this?
Me? Oh. No, I do want your shirt off.
Oh, I'm going to take it off.
Shirt
hold on.
And accessories, because I don't want to get hurt.
Oh, accessories too? Hold on.
Back to safe group sex.
That's right. I like your thinking.
Yeah, let me take off rings, because my rings are rather
large,
gaudy and large.
Oh, they're fantastically gaudy. Woo-hoo!
Dr. Here Susie, she goes. She oh, she's stripping. Woohoo.
Titties.
Titties.
Oh, wait. Can I motorboat you, please?
Wait, let me take her bra.
Oh, she's going to take her bra off. Brothers and sisters, we have tatas.
This is the first hit.
This is one of my best friend's birthdays.
Yeah.
And I only do this on special
occasions. Oh, she is revealing her gigantamus. 40, what are they? 40 something?
They're actually 36
double D's. And natural?
Yes, they're all natural. Yes.
Yeah, and, of course, and we have two kind of doms here who are trying to spank each other. But, you know, look at those boobies shaking away there. I think we've got an orgy in the Radio Susie One studio. We were so inspired by our talk with Dr. Kate.
Yes, Dr. Kate.
All right. Yeah, this is Dr. Kate. You can look at her picture while you spank the birthday girl.
Kind of get off my carousel.
I like motivation, Dr. Susie.
Yeah, here she is. Right up against the stripper pole.
I'm getting my spanks against the stripper pole.
Yeah.
It's only fitting.
And are you ready? We're going to count you down. You ready?
Yeah, here we go.
My naughty, nasty little girl.
You naughty, nasty
Let's
little
turn
birthday
you
girl.
Woo! So we can see those cheeks. Get you on
okay. Yeah. Now, no, wait, you talk onto the microphone, though. There you
Here,
go.
Give me your mic.
Okay. Take a mic.
Yes, because hers is mobile.
Except then she needs a mic.
Oh yes.
Because we need to hear her groan. Webcam camera. Okay. The webcam camera. Get onto the webcam camera.
Okay. You ready?
Where is it now? Here it is. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna pick it up. I guess.
Yes, you can bring it right over here.
Hey, Dr. Susie, how you doing?
Hey. And that hat is actually very awesome.
You look fantastic,
thank you.
And those stockings are fantastic. Right. Dr. Susie is always fantastic.
I know she is.
Here's my stockings.
Styling and profiling, red on red.
Okay, are we ready to get these cheeks birthdayized?
Birthday eyes.
Okay, ready? Ready?
Yeah, okay. Wait, I don't have a good view of the titties. Go over it. Yeah, there you go. Okay, very good.
We can do
okay.
It like this, right?
That's good. Here we go.
One. I want you to count it down for me, Trix.
Then everybody will know how old
I am. No, they won't, because I'm going to give you some extras. Ready?
Okay, we won't know. We don't know.
One.
Two.
Oh.
That was two.
That was
You're greedy.
Go back to one.
You're just greedy.
Let's just go back
okay,
to
we'll
one.
Just start at one. Ready? Count it.
One. Two.
I can't hear you with that bubble butt. Come on.
Three.
Count them off.
That sounds like a phone sex groan.
Count them off.
Four.
Ooh, look at that little brown behind starting to get red.
Oh, it's almost as red as your panties.
Seven, eight, nine, ten.
Rub it.
Oh, she's kissing it, sort of.
Well, she's an ass licker.
Oh, she's ass licking, yeah. Little like arrow play right there, yeah. Uh-huh. Kiss,
yeah.
Love. Oh, whacking. Yeah. And this is kind of a hard implement you've got there.
This is actually made by Jux. This is
Jux Lee.
Oh, this is a Jux Lee.
This is a
product.
Jux Lee implement here, and he is
it's awesomeness. My favorite one.
You know Jux.
He's a genius.
All about genius and domination.
Of Jux leather. That's a Jux leather product.
Yes. That's J-U-X or J-U-X-X?
J-U-X-L-I-I.
Exactly. J-U-X-L-I. Turn around.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Turn over.
I get caught up in my own ass.
Ready? So where are we? What number are we on?
One.
Numbers game.
She's such a dirty whore.
That is getting
She's such a dirty birthday
red.
Whore. Come on. Seriously, 12.
No, okay.
Yes, we're on 12.
Okay.
Okay, wait.
How you feeling, Trixie? I mean, how's your
Can
ass?
You take more? Can you see my nipple?
Oh, yeah.
Can you see this my nipple my on your ass? Crap, hold on.
Oh, wait. There you go. Oh. Ah!
Now, that's what I call a jug. That's like the essence
it's
of jug.
It's actually like a milk jug, Dr. Smith.
Yeah. Wait.
Oh. Whoops, I didn't get it because your arm is in the way.
Get that big old arm out of the way.
There we go. Wait, do that again.
And I get birthday legs. It's not even my birthday and I get legs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, turn around. Get around. Get around here. Get around here. More birthdays.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Get over there. Breaking. So we're on 12. So the next one you're going to count off is 13. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Woo! All right,
so 13. Let's go. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Come on. Don't you bitch out on me now.
Oh, yeah.
21.
Come on. Come on.
22.
Come on. You can take it.
23.
Come on. You can take it, baby.
24.
Give it to me. Give it to me. You can take it. You can take it. You can take it. You can take it. Oh, you dirty little whore. You dirty little birthday whore.
These are the sounds of a spanking orgy.
Hold on. Let me kiss
Live on Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web. Watch it on drsuzy.tv. We're inspired by plays well in groups. And that is something you need to do when you play well in groups, is after a hard spanking, you need to kiss it.
You yes. need to, so yeah. that they know that you love
that
it.
You love
that you can abuse it, but you can love it too.
Oh, yeah. Look at that tousled
Don't use it
hair.
If you can't abuse it.
Yeah. Tousled. She's such a tousled whore.
Yeah. How's your ass?
It's a little rosy.
How
a
many did we red. Do? Did you keep count?
Yeah.
Don't lie. Tell
I
me.
Didn't.
You didn't.
I did.
You
did one.
She's such a birthday spanking whore. We did one.
She loves it.
She's like, more, please.
Okay, so now what about this young lady over here? Are we supposed to spank her? I mean, the
this
birthday
is
girl.
My. This spank? Is a newcomer to you? The porn
Scarlet
industry.
Raven.
Her name is Scarlet Raven Double X. She's at Twitter, Scarlet 2T's Raven Double X.
I think the birthday girl might need to get out some frustrations and spank her.
Yeah, yeah. Get over here. This is my Ginge. I love this. I love this little ginger girl. She's super Ginge. She's red upstairs, and the carpet does match the drapes.
All right.
I love a true ginger.
So we're going to see this true ginger's nips
my
and see if they're pink
sex
like they're supposed to be.
Phone call away.
Yes, they are. They are super pink. Selena, you know Selena loves pink ginger tits. Let me say this.
No fantasy is too taboo.
I love pink ginger tits.
Hashtag that.
That would be G-I-N-G.
Are we retweeting the ginge twits?
Retitting the ginge twits.
All right, we got to get on with this. We need the spanking.
Spank her. Turn her around. Turn her around. Newcomer to Bonoboville. Look at that boot. Woo! Look at that booty. Spanker. Spinker tricks.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get my big ass out of the way.
There goes the Jux leather belt.
There it is.
Woo!
Is that three? Wow. That's four. You're supposed to be counting your own spankings, Ginge.
It's not her birthday. I don't think it matters.
Okay, move. It's my turn. Let me get some spanks in here.
Okay, well, in the meantime, while I want to give the birthday girl her present.
Yay, we love presents.
Ooh, presents.
Here she goes, Trixie Plenty with plenty of presents.
Yeah.
She gets Arrows.com.
We love Arrows. They have the best lube in the world.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's my favorite kind of tank, so I will be rocking this on the daily.
Thanks.
I will
guys.
See you waking up in that in Bonoboville.
Right? Rolling into the office.
And now this is special.
With a paintbrush.
Oh, my God. Five-finger massage glove, and it's a righty. Oh, my.
Let me see.
We're going to have fun with this tonight.
Okay, somebody put the batteries in. I want you to feel
it. I know. Can I have some batteries, please?
Okay, I think we do. I think we do. Let's get somebody to put the batteries into the glove.
Here.
So we get a feel of that before
the end
of the show.
I need to test that out. I'm a fantastic product tester. I'll write a blog for you.
And we actually sell those on the site. Massage gloves, yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Can we find it on our marketplace?
Every girl needs panties.
I love panties. And it's cheetah print. Oh, I love cheetah print. I love all things cheetah.
You like that shirt? I gave her the shirt we got at Sex Week at Yale. The one that says, nope, still gay.
Nope, still gay.
Oh my God. Dr.
Susie,
I love you.
Dr. Susie, you have no idea like how much this would mean to her.
I got
especially
that.
At this point in life.
At Sex Week at Yale a couple years ago. And turn it around a second so we give a promo to the people that made
at
it.
Chemistry.
That's
dot
at chemistry.com. Helen Fisher is the psychologist at chemistry.com that was at Sex Week at Yale that gave us the shirt. So
this
we are giving it to
the
you.
This is the only company online, the dating company, that supports same-sex couples.
Yes.
Well, there you go. So that's why they have the shirt. Nope.
Still gay. Yeah. Last time I checked, I still love pussy.
Okay.
Just like
what
you.
What else is in there? Just little things.
Obama condom.
Everybody
I
needs
always
one.
Need condoms, and I
well,
like
I
that
know.
Has Obama on it.
Yeah, it does.
Makes me feel like a black man.
Okay, so then there's some other
you are a black man.
Kind of regular condom.
Astro
and you
blood.
Get a Frank Moore button.
Oh, fantastic. Dr. Susie.
I need a Frank Moore button, Dr. Susie.
Okay, you get one too.
Okay. So I'm going to need your pretty little
dude, that's industrial.
Your pretty little chocolate
ooh.
Wonderfulness in my hand.
Chocolate
so that,
wonderfulness.
I'm going to need her pretty little birthday chocolate wonderfulness.
I break vibrators.
So that I can put
fantastic.
my vibrating. Wait, where's the camera?
Oh, yeah, is that vibrating?
Yes, this is my vibrating hand glove.
It's very good. It's very good.
I'm notorious for breaking vibrators.
I know. I love this. This
is
the vibrating glove.
Oh,
yeah,
a minute.
And let me just tell you, it's also waterproof.
You dirty whore.
It's waterproof?
It's waterproof. You can do it in the tub. Oh, yeah. Oh, we got just a few minutes.
Sorry, can't get an orgasm in 3 minutes.
Okay, but
oh, yes, you can.
But you can get a spanking in 3 minutes. Here, you can go ahead and spank me in 3 minutes.
Oh, my God. That's...
Thank okay,
you,
give
Dr.
me.
Susie.
You take this one, and you.
That was
one.
The best birthday present
Those
I've received.
Those are awesome birthday presents.
Nice.
Thank you.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't spank me too hard, because I'm.
I'll spank you for 3 minutes.
I'm a wham.
Well, just 1 minute, because
one
then
minute.
I have to
just
thank
one
everybody. Here she goes, birthday girl. Trixie, Plenty, spanking Selena. Well, wait a second.
Okay.
Here we go. One more whack.
You wanna?
One more.
One more for the birthday girl. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday.
That
okay.
Hey, that was
so
hard.
Now we're gonna thank everybody, sorta. I hope. I think if I remember everybody. This has been a fantastic show. Thank you so much to our featured guest, Dr. Catherine Frank. Oops. Yes. Dr. Catherine Frank, author of Plays Well in Groups.
Turn my mic up.
A Journey Through the World.
Test.
Of group sex. Woohoo! Yes, and it's got all the naughty group sex. It's got all the good,
all the
bad. It's the best, most comprehensive book on group sex.
I can't.
Ever. Right?
I got it. Yeah.
It is.
And we appreciate your joining us, Dr. Catherine, all the way from American University. And I want to thank, of course, the birthday girl, Trixie Plenty. Woohoo! You're not getting very many applause, Trixie.
I know.
What are we going to do? Oh, the vibrating glove. Oh, well, you know, you got to kind of turn it off. Yeah. And I want to thank, of course, Selena for joining us, Miss Selena White. And the newbie here who got herself spanked, Scarlet Raven. And of course, I want to thank our Cracker Jack team of techies and producers. Let's see. I want to thank...
Especially the crackers.
Yeah, the crackheads. Let's thank Abe. And Mar. And John. And Lily, our show producer. And Jade, our editorial tweeter person.
Tweet, tweet, twat, twat.
Gonzo Bonobo. That's Chris. Okay, he doesn't want to use his real name, so we're calling him Gonzo Bonobo. Okay. And Michael Angelo and L'Erotique. L'Erotique. And Max, my butler, my captain.
Let's hear the clap.
Clap, 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 clap. Yay. And I want to thank all of you who are out there listening and watching, whether you're in a cardboard box or a mansion on a hill, whether you're having an orgy or you're all alone. I want you to be good. I want you to be happy. I want you to, whoops, okay, there goes that. Find the pleasure in your life, whether it's orgies or masturbation, whatever way your pleasure comes to you or whatever makes you come, find it, explore it, and do it in a nice, consensual way, you know? Make like bonobos, not baboons. Make love, not war. We love you, Frank Moore. We love you so much, and we'll be with you sooner than we know. So in the meantime, make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. I love you.
Hey, from our house to your house, thank you for having us. See you soon.
Spanking orgy!
Okay.
Need to talk with someone about something you can't talk about with anyone else? You can talk to us. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your mistress of the airwaves. But my day job is director of the Dr. Susan Block Institute for the Erotic Arts and Sciences, specializing in sex therapy over the phone. Anytime you need to talk, whether you need serious psychotherapy or a hot phone sex experience or a combination, my world-renowned telephone sex therapists are just a phone call away. Totally private, absolutely confidential. We listen, talk with you, advise you, role play for you, fantasize with you. No fantasy is too taboo, and help you with anything from impotence to exhibitionism, fears to desires, fetishes to marriages. For more information, call us at 213-291-9497. That's 213-291-9497 anytime you need to talk.
You're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web.